Welcome to Current State. I'm Reginald Hardwick, WKAR Digital News Director. We start with a developing situation at Michigan State University. Less than a week after the resignation of President Luana K. Simon, the Board of Trustees installed former Governor John Engler as interim president.
I understand the concern and uncertainty, as well as the frustration and anger. To those parents, be assured that I will move forward as if my own daughters were on this campus and will treat every survivor and every student as I would my own daughter.
But many students and MSU faculty protested the move, voicing their disapproval.
I want a change. I don't want apologies. I don't want your money. I want a change.
This is our school. We have 50,000 students. We all pay lots of tuition to come here. And we believe that we should have a voice in the selection process of the interim president.
It's time to do your job. And at this point, your job is to resign because honestly, you're not very good at it.
All of this happening as Larry Nassar comes face to face with more of his sex abuse survivors.
Things get way out of control in an Eaton County courtroom when a father of three girls victimized by Larry Nassar confronts the disgraced former doctor in court. And that father.
In the next hour, we take a look at the interim MSU president and the opposition against him. Could the scandal cost student enrollment at MSU? We'll talk with a family considering whether their daughter will be a Spartan this fall. I'll talk with a Michigan congressman who hints there may be former or current MSU leaders called to congressional hearings. And one of Larry Nassar's abuse survivors tells us what they need now. But first, leadership changes and challenges at Michigan State University. This week, the Board of Trustees unanimously decided that former Governor John Engler would be the person to lead the school in the interim. A Republican, Engler vowed to put politics aside to be the very best leader for MSU.
Finally, I give my commitment to do everything in my power to fix the situation, to protect our students, repair the damage to Michigan State University, and plot a course forward so we can all hold our head up high, call ourselves Spartans.
Engler served as Michigan's governor from 1991 through 2002. As governor, he helped overhaul school funding and was a strong advocate for charter schools. But many are critical of his handling of investigations of sexual assaults of imprisoned women in Michigan. I talked with Ted Roloffs of The Bridge magazine, who wrote an article about Engler's connection to those cases.
There was a federal lawsuit. This is all regarding widespread reports of abuse of female prisoners in Michigan prisons by male prison guards. What was especially new and pertinent to this story is that Bridge magazine obtained a letter that, as governor in 1998, John Engler wrote to the United Nations. They were seeking access to Michigan prisons to investigate reports of abuse of female prisoners. He denied the United Nations access and wrote in this letter that the ongoing federal lawsuit at the time was baseless and without merit, as he called it. Further, he said, looking at this letter, view the United Nations as an unwitting tool in the Justice Department's agenda to discredit the state of Michigan. In spite of objective evidence, the state of Michigan has not violated the civil and constitutional rights of women inmates.
And when you talked to the governor's spokesperson, what did he say?
Well, he said they weren't going to roll over for the United Nations in response to that letter, said they had no jurisdiction, no right to be asking to get into these prisons. He also pointed out that Engler was involved in a move by the Department of Corrections to remove male guards from female prisoners to demonstrate that he was proactive in dealing with that issue.
That was Ted Roloffs of The Bridge magazine. We have a link to The Bridge article at WKAR.org. We also need to mention that we have asked for an interview with Governor Engler, but as of Friday afternoon, we have yet to hear back from the president's office. Now let's turn to Capitol correspondent Shayna Roth, who was at the trustees meeting when Engler was approved. Shayna, thanks for joining us at Current State.
Thank you for having me.
You were in the Board of Trustees meeting when Governor Engler was approved as interim president. What was the reaction?
For lack of a better word, frustration and in some cases anger, at least on the part of the students and the faculty. The board members came out and they were unanimous in their vote, and each one kind of took a few minutes to in some ways defend their decision. They made statements about how Engler is a strong leader. You know, he's somebody who has experience with really kind of taking charge and with leading people through difficult times. A faculty member read a letter that was kind of on behalf of this faculty group that said, "We do not agree with this choice. We told you this isn't the type of person that we want. We gave you suggestions." These teachers said that at their next meeting, they're planning to put forward this vote of no confidence in the Board of Trustees. And if that passes, they will call on the entire Board of Trustees to step down. Students were also incredibly frustrated. There were a handful of them there. And at one point, a student jumped up on the table and another was giving speeches. And they were really just really frustrated with the board and saying, "You're not listening to us. This is not the type of person we want. You said you wanted to work with us, but you're not. You're just going ahead and doing what you want to do."
Then came Thursday night, and you and I attended a town hall hosted by Trustee Brian Masalam. Let's listen in to what he told us before the town hall and then a few of the comments that were made by the students.
I'm going to listen to them, and I'm going to listen to our courageous survivors, to our students, our faculty, the MSU community, and my goal is to follow their direction.
"While I'm lucky enough to have not been raped, I have plenty of friends who have been assaulted. And do you know what they say when people say that they should report it to campus? When's the last time you heard them supporting victims?
You need to face the consequences I would face if I, as a student, I have a quiz tomorrow with vibrations. If I don't study, I fail. I don't get that grade. You have failed, so you need to resign.
If you're going to tell us that you care, then every single one of y'all should have been here."
Okay.
And again, that was a few of the students and Trustee Brian Masalam at the town hall on Thursday night at the Kellogg Center at MSU. Shana, for you, what struck as reoccurring themes that you heard from students?
Anger, frustration, pain. Several students who got up and spoke were just in breaking down into tears at some points while they were giving a speech. The message from these students and other members of the community, including faculty and staff, was really that this is a school administration that is not listening to them. They want to be proud of the school that they go to. They want to really reclaim the reputation that their school is getting in the wake of the Larry Nassar scandal and in the wake of these revelations about how MSU has handled sexual assault complaints. But they really feel like the administration is giving them a lot of lip service, that the administration is saying, "We want to work with you. We want to hear from you. We want to learn from you." But and then in the next moment, their actions are doing otherwise.
I think two things that struck me is that women said over and over again they do not feel safe on the MSU campus, and they don't feel even safe with the reporting procedures. And the other thing that struck me is that a lot of people took Brian Masalam to task. They credited him with actually listening and having this town hall, but at the same time, they took him to task for voting with the other trustees to install interim president Engler.
In some cases, getting personal, there was one woman who said to him, "You know, I've known you, I've worked with you, and I just don't know who you are anymore." And I think there was a feeling of betrayal by some of these people. You know, a lot of students were saying that that all MSU cares about when it comes to them anymore is their money. And they're not really, that the school doesn't care about them as people.
Well, thank you, Capitol correspondent Shana Roth. I know you've been all over this story and you're helping us cover it as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Current State on WKAR News. MSU is under intense scrutiny as it continues to recruit new students and as it tries to maintain its standing with alumni and donors. WKAR's Kevin Lavery reports.
Hundreds of high school seniors pack a conference room at the MSU Kellogg Center, supercharging the place with nervous excitement. They've come to stake their claim at the Alumni Distinguished Scholarship Competition. Each one hopes to catch the eyes of the gatekeepers who allow the worthy to enter into Spartan Nation. Jim Cotter leads that team. He's the executive director of admissions and recruitment at MSU. Cotter welcomes the competitors by asking them to take a risk.
This weekend is about you, and it's about broadening your horizons. You now have 1 minute to stand and introduce yourself to someone you've never met before and to begin to engage in the Spartan community. Go!
The students' visit comes at a precarious time. The Larry Nassar sexual abuse scandal has thrown Michigan State University under the microscope and shaken the campus to its core. It all begs the question, will MSU continue to be an attractive educational option for new students? Jim Cotter speaks from 34 years in recruitment.
You really do have to do some soul searching. We're not perfect. We need to continue to get better. We need to continue to work together and to listen to people. But first and foremost, for a student who's visiting, I simply want them to ask the question, can they see themselves here?
Can they see themselves safe, listened to, authority figures they can trust? Can they see that as well?
I don't think that's a decision that I can make for people. I think individuals have to make that decision for themselves.
Be assured that I will move forward as if my own daughters were on this campus.
That's John Engler, MSU's incoming interim president. The former Republican Michigan governor, who's the father of triplet daughters, delivered that vow to all Spartan parents. Lance Olson will soon be one of them.
Right here behind you is Eustace Cole, which houses our Honors College.
On a frigid afternoon, Olson and his family trudge through slushy, ankle-deep snow at MSU. They've come to East Lansing from their home in suburban Chicago to check out the campus where their daughter will live as a freshman. Lance Olson has followed the news about the sexual assault allegations that have plagued the MSU athletics department.
Yes, I've been concerned. The amount of revenue that the sports programs generates is huge, and I think it's reprehensible, and some of the actions they need to clean the place up.
But MSU doesn't just have to assure new parents. It's also trying to keep smooth relations with its longtime patrons.
There is no doubt that this will be damaging to the university in the short run, and they want to see that addressed as quickly as possible.
Bob Groves is vice president for university advancement at MSU. He says most alumni and donors remain loyal to the university. Still, Groves says they're worried about tangible costs like tuition rates, as well as the immeasurable human cost the crisis is inflicting.
All those things are in their mind. We're trying to listen, make sure their voices get heard in this process, and those that have made contributions of any size understand that they're doing that to make the university stronger, and this feels like a setback.
As the stream of investigations, apologies, protests, and finger-pointing continues, Michigan State University continues to receive incoming students. Parent Lance Olson is thinking about his daughter, whom he says, despite the scandal, is looking forward to starting classes at MSU next fall.
It really hasn't dampened, you know, her enthusiasm for the university. You know, she's excited, she's admitted, so we're pressing forward.
The coming days will be telling for the future of Michigan State University. Interim President John Engler faces a skeptical and enraged constituency who will be scrutinizing his every move and those of the 8 trustees at his side. For WKAR News, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Now let's turn to the latest investigations involving MSU's handling of the sexual abuse complaints against former physician Larry Nassar. The university faces lawsuits filed by more than 100 girls and women and investigations by the state attorney general, the NCAA, and Congress. Earlier this week, I talked with Representative Mike Bishop, whose district includes MSU, and among other things, he told me we could see MSU leaders answer questions during congressional hearings.
I've talked to university officials on several occasions. It's my hope that they not only comply and participate freely and openly with the Attorney General's investigation at the state level, but also that they conduct their own investigation. I think it's important for Michigan State to have an independent investigation to uncover their own facts. Not only just to find out what happened. That's absolutely important. But what's most important right now is to make sure that we don't go forward without learning, you know, from this and making sure that it doesn't happen again.
What questions about MSU or what happened at MSU do you want answered, and who would you like to hear from?
Well, I'm interested to hear how the Attorney General's investigation comes out, but I'm also I'm very concerned that there are officials that have not reported things that they've known about, and I want to find out who that is. I want to get to the bottom of it. If my child were involved in this, I would want the same thing. I listened to 156 victims step forward and tell their story in court, and it was horrifying to me. And we all owe it to them and to their families to make sure that we find out from anybody who knew anything, anybody who should have known something, and we get to the bottom of it. And like I said earlier, we got to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Do you think there will be congressional hearings in pulling some folks from MSU?
I anticipate that when congressional hearings move forward, that they will request the participation of some of the university officials. I can't tell you exactly who that might be, but I do know it's an integral part of any investigation.
You mentioned that you listened to some of the victim impact statements. Did any of them stick out? Do you know any of the victims?
I don't personally know the victims. I'm in contact with one of the victims' families because I want to make sure they have requested to be a part of whatever investigation that we do, and which I will honor and make sure that I make that connection with the team here. But all of them stuck. I'm a former prosecutor, and I have had the opportunity to advocate on behalf of victims of domestic violence and other type of difficult situations. And my heart goes out to these folks. I've seen it all too often. And all of them deserve an advocate. All of them deserve justice. And that really is what our role is now, to make sure that we deliver that.
What should people know who are in your district, which includes MSU, that you're getting to the bottom and we really will get to the bottom of what happened?
Well, that's our role now. We now are in a position to make sure that whatever we do from now going forward, we do in such a way so that we keep those victims and their families forefront in our minds, and that we do everything to make sure that we get to the bottom of this, and that our investigation and that everything that we do in the future, legislation that addresses these issues, that that is put in place to ensure that this doesn't happen again, is part of our thought process, that we include them in the public policy and make sure that these victims and their families are in our hearts and minds as we craft these pieces of public policy going forward.
Congressman Mike Bishop from the 8th Congressional District here in Michigan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Just ahead on Current State, one of Larry Nassar's victims talks about her future after confronting him in court.
It doesn't go away just because he's sentenced. So that's still hard to deal with, and I still have to process everything that happened.
Plus, Lansing State Journal columnist Graham Crouch talks about why the Nassar scandal has affected the Capital Region so deeply.
For the illusion of what we thought of Michigan State, what we thought it was, and because it was Camelot for a while over here.
You're listening to Current State from WKAR News. Welcome back to Current State. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. Late Friday, Attorney General Bill Schuette added two more tools for his investigation into how MSU may have mishandled sexual assault complaints about Larry Nassar. He created a hotline and an email address for anonymous tips. The MSU investigation hotline is 844-324-3374, and it's open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, 844-324-3374. There is also an online form at michigan.gov. We have links to both the phone number and the email address at WKAR.org. Now, new developments in the case of Larry Nassar. A judge says there's no way she'll punish the father of three victims after he tried to attack the former sports doctor in an Eaton County courtroom. WKAR's Katie Cook was in court when it happened.
Randall Margraves is the father of three daughters who were all victims of Larry Nassar. After two of his daughters made their statements to the court Friday morning, he asked to speak.
I would ask you to, as part of this sentencing, to grant me 5 minutes in a locked room with this demon.
Would you do that? That is not.
Yes or no?
No, sir, I can't.
Would you give me 1 minute?
You know that I can't do that. That's not how our legal system.
Well, I'm going to have to get it.
He lunged at Nassar, who was sitting nearby at the defendant's table. And in that moment, more than a dozen people leapt into action, some to tackle Margraves to the floor, while others whisked Nassar out of the courtroom. Later, Margraves and his attorney were brought back into the courtroom so Judge Cunningham could address the contempt of court. Margraves apologized, explaining he had been hearing his daughter's statements for the first time. They didn't tell him what they were going to say. He became very angry listening to them describe their abuse and watching Nassar shake his head while they were speaking. Judge Cunningham said she could give Margraves a jail sentence or fine him up to $7,500, but she didn't want to do that. She expressed sympathy with what he was going through and made him promise there would be no more disruptions. He was dismissed from the courtroom. For WKAR News, I'm Katie Cook.
The victim impact statements during the sentencing hearing of Larry Nassar resumes on Monday. Follow us on Twitter using the handle WKAR News for up-to-the-minute updates from the courtroom. Welcome back to Current State. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. If there is one thing that is clear, the pain for the girls and women who have given victim impact statements during Larry Nassar's sentencing hearing in Ingham and Eaton counties is very real. We're going to talk with one of those women now. Alexis Alvarado joins us now by phone from Muskegon. Thank you for talking with us here on Current State.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You talked a little bit about it in court, but could you briefly tell us how you were referred to Larry Nassar and what happened when you met with him?
So I was a gymnast in Lansing, and I had hurt my back, and I went to my family doctor multiple times, and it just wasn't helping. So some people at my gym suggested that I see Larry Nassar because he was the best. So that's how I got referred to him.
You were one of more than 150 women to give victim impact statements in Judge Aquilina's court in Ingham County. What was that experience like?
For me, it was really overwhelming, and I was very nervous the day that I was going to speak, and being up there and having to face him was very nerve-wracking, and I was very, very nervous. But afterwards, it was really empowering, and I felt a lot of relief.
Besides Larry Nassar, are you hoping there are other people held accountable, or what are you hoping from the other investigations?
Yeah, well, I think that there are a lot of people that knew about what was happening and did nothing, and those people definitely need to be held accountable. I mean, yes, Simon stepped down, and that was great. That's what needed to happen, but she still has all of her benefits, all of her everything, and if she really stepped down, well, she did, but if she really was at fault, why would she step down? I mean, obviously she must have made a mistake somewhere, and she knows she did. And she should lose her pension and like everything. So she's just one person. And then, obviously, like people at MSU, additional like doctors, all the trainers, they all need to be held accountable.
So, of course, when you were talking about Simon, you're talking about former MSU president Luana K. Simon. Let me ask you about you, and how have you coped with this experience and been able to move your life forward?
I mean, it's been really, really difficult, and I mean, I have good days and bad days, and after court, I mean, I've mostly had good days, but I have had days where I really struggle, where I thought I would feel, like, completely better, but it doesn't go away just because he's sentenced. So that's still hard to deal with, and I still have to process everything that happened. But it helps knowing that he admitted what he did, and he's going to be put away.
When you say you have bad days, is it just tough to get out of bed? I mean, what is that?
Yeah, it's just really tough to get out of bed. It's hard to stay motivated, and it's just really difficult.
Have you been able to reach out to, as the judge said, some of your sister survivors? Or
yeah, I mean, we all talk every single day. We even, like, have a Facebook page that's just for us, and it's private. And if you're ever having a bad day or if you need help with something, you just post on there, and we're all there to help.
We have had a lot of people ask, especially here at the MSU Lansing community that is so heartbroken, what can they do to help the survivors?
That's a really hard question. I guess what they could do is just remain being supportive and continue calling out the people that need to be held accountable for letting this happen for so many years.
Are there enough services, do you think, and help for sexual assault victims or sexual abuse victims? Have you?
I don't think so. I think that there needs to be more awareness about this, and there needs to be more places where people can get help anonymously, or it shouldn't be so difficult to get help.
What were some of the problems that you ran into?
I'm in counseling, and it's not cheap. It's pretty expensive, and then having to wait to get into someone can take months, and sometimes people don't have that much time where they need to see someone right away.
What is there for people to learn? You know, there are people who watch these statements all around the country. I mean, you know, what is it that we as a country could learn from this experience?
I think that's important for everyone to know that if a child comes to you and says something, even if you don't believe it, to follow through with it and check up and report it and not ignore it. Because that happened so many times with this case where kids came forward and they weren't believed. And that shouldn't even be a thing. It shouldn't even be happening, because if someone just listened to that, like, one person, it never would have happened to so many other girls. And so I think that people really need to listen and be aware of this and talk about it.
What are your career plans?
Currently I'm at Ferris, and I'm in the Healthcare Systems Administration program, and hopefully this summer I'll be able to get a job working somewhere in the medical field, and then when I graduate, I want to be an administrator for healthcare.
Thank you for your courage, and thank you for, you know, telling your story to the world. I imagine it's not easy to do, and thank you for telling your story to us as well.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Alexis Alvarado joining us from Muskegon on the phone. She was one of more than 150 girls and women who gave victim impact statements in Ingham County during Larry Nassar's sentencing. We've talked about the MSU interim president, admissions, the Nassar sentencing, and now MSU athletics and its future. Joining me now is WKAR current sports host Al Martin and Lansing State Journal columnist Graham Couch. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you, Reg.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Several sources say Greg Ayani will be named the interim athletic director at Michigan State. So, Graham, I'll start with you. What do we know about him?
Well, he's a facilities guy, has been for a long time. I mean, he's in large part responsible for a lot of the things you've seen go up around campus over the last decade or so. And he's also, I think, a really nice guy. Like, if you were looking nice guy in the dictionary, you'd find Greg Ayani. And I've always had good dealings with him in that sense. I think he is somebody who's knows the inner workings of the athletic department. And I know there are a lot of people want somebody from outside. They want a different perspective. But there is also just the day-to-day operations of things. In all these roles, you need people who can function and keep things moving while you make a decision on what direction you want to go. And I think he is somebody who can do that. I think he is somebody who knows at the athletic department. And he's somebody people know and trust within the athletic department, even if outsiders aren't thrilled entirely that it's somebody inside.
To echo much of what Graham just had to say, I mean, he was the guy to run the day-to-day operations whenever Hollis would be, you know, busy with the NCAA committees and other responsibilities. When it comes to the athletic facilities, I mean, he's been one of the premier men who have been in charge of handling those improvements and updates and event management for different sports. He's an MSU alum from back in the 70s. He knows this area very well, and his children, as we know, Anthony, actually, he, you know, is a former basketball player of Tom Izzo. So he was naturally the guy that a lot of people expected to step into that role.
Do we have any idea if Yanni did know, like, Larry Nassar, or would be even around that gymnastics program, or have anything to do with kind of getting doctors to the athletes or anything?
No, that wasn't his role. And the other thing that keep in mind is, I mean, doctors, that MSU health team does not report to MSU athletics. So they report to, I think, radiology even. I mean, it's not, the connection is less than people think. And he didn't deal directly with women's gymnastics as an oversight thing either. So his name hasn't come up in documents and other things as well. So I don't think that will be an issue for people as much as it might have been for some people who wanted Mark Hollis, in terms of he is the top of athletics. And so, yeah, I don't think that will be an issue for people.
Does Greg Iani have a shot of having this job permanently, or is it just too early to know?
I think it's a little too early, right, Graham? I mean, I think we have to let this thing kind of play out and see. Maybe you can expound a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, I think he was fairly close to retirement. So I would be surprised if it's him long-term. But what is long term? If interimly things go well and people trust him and respect him and want him there, could he be there for 3, 4, 5 years and they decide that's something to do? You know, I don't know. I don't know how any of this will play out. I doubt that. But I think he is a good stopgap.
Graham, you wrote in a column last week that the Nassar scandal is personal. What did you mean by that?
Well, I wanted to try and capture what the Lansing community was feeling, because I thought at the end of the week, sort of, it was a week that was fast moving of just emotional blows, and this is very much a Lansing story in the sense that MSU is a huge part of the heartbeat of Lansing. It is, you know, it, and this is not just MSU, it was Twistars. There were tons of kids that, you know, go through there. I know kids who went through Twistars growing up. My sister went through Twistars. Lots of kids just went through regular gymnastics classes. There's the association there, the Holt community, where Larry Nassar was, you know, was involved in the schools. And so he was part of our community and for a long time. And so I think that – and there's also this sense that I think there is a grieving process in our own community that I don't know that we're in yet, but is one of the emotions for the illusion of what we thought of Michigan State and what we thought it was. And because it was Camelot for a while over here. And that's something else you have to go through, because – you know, the national media will come in, and they'll be here for a while, and this will be a story for a while. But ultimately, we're left with our university in our backyard, and we've got to get it right now. And this is going to be – I mean, we all know people who work here who are good people in all walks of life in this campus, students who are here. And there are lots of – the connections are run deep.
Well, thank you for both of your perspectives. Graham Couch, columnist with the Lansing State Journal, and Al Martin, who you can hear weekdays at 1 p.m. on Current Sports on AM 870 and FM 105.1 WKER News Talk. Thank you for joining us for Current State.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Reg.
Up next on Current State, we'll move the discussion off campus. We'll tag along with local firefighters for training they hope they'll never have to use. Remember your Christmas tree? Find out why it could be a key to stopping the spread of an invasive species in the Great Lakes. And meet the Spartan going for gold when the Winter Olympics start next week. Current State on WKAR News returns after this. Welcome back to Current State. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. During this segment, we're going to shift away from MSU for a little bit and take you to some other stories happening in the Capital Region and the Great Lakes. Last week's deadly shooting at a Kentucky high school was one of nearly a dozen such incidents that took place on a school property in the U.S. since the start of this year. Active shooter training is quickly becoming mainstream in schools and workplaces across the country. First responders in mid-Michigan are testing their skills in such a scenario. Last week, crews from six area fire departments took part in a training session in East Lansing. And WKAR's Kevin Lavery was there.
It's Tuesday afternoon at the East Lansing Hanna Community Center, and all eyes are fixed on Tony Castillo. He's walking his class through a 911 phone call that followed one of the worst mass shootings in American history.
What are some key pieces that call taker was able to pull out and extract from that?
White male wearing black.
White male wearing black.
Location.
Location, location, location.
The class is studying the Columbine Massacre, the 1999 incident at a suburban Denver high school in which two students killed 12 students and a teacher. Back then, most American schools had no emergency response plans beyond simply sheltering in place. Columbine changed all that, and not long afterwards, ALICE was born. ALICE is a program, not a person. It stands for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Evacuate. Tony Castillo is a national instructor with the ALICE Training Institute in Ohio. He's running his class through a series of drills in which the participants must react to an active shooter in their midst.
The very first one, they're going to be put in a position where they can be victimized. And it's going to demonstrate for them the importance of moving beyond that traditional lockdown.
The trainees gather in several rooms off a quiet upstairs hallway and wait.
Ready, ready, ready.
They're bracing for the simulation when they'll be told there's an active shooter nearby. When she appears, the shooter harmlessly fires soft, tiny balls from a plastic compressed air gun. No one is in any real physical danger. Still, there's a psychological edge to this exercise. When it's over, Castillo does his debrief. Who got shot? 19 hands go up.
How'd that make you feel?
The community center's coordinator, Elaine Hardy, doesn't raise her hand. Still, she's slightly wounded emotionally. Hardy was the shooter.
I felt really nervous, and I told you I felt horrible, because I hate guns, and I don't even play guns with my little guy. It was horrible for me, but I did see how vulnerable people were. I've never shot anything in my life, and 19 of you said I shot you.
The class resets for the next drill. This time, they're told to evacuate when they hear the alert.
Don't run. Don't run.
Once again, Tony Castillo looks for his shooting victims.
I see one down there, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Drill number three. And this time, the class is told to counter. There's a distinction to be made here. Castillo makes it clear that this is not fighting, an action that requires fine motor skills. Countering is something more primal. It's a strategy of last resort, an all-out attempt designed to throw an attacker's mindset off balance. And what's the countermeasure for this drill? Each student is armed with a red rubber ball to hurl at their intruder. Although this class was geared toward local first responders, ALICE is also meant to give victims some means of self-defense before help arrives. Trainer Tony Castillo sees it as giving people some options if they ever find themselves caught in a desperate situation.
They're empowered to do something else to save their life or the life of people that they're in charge of. That's what the primary takeaway is. How do you survive these events?
For WKAR, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Thank you for listening to Current State on WKAR. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder says a new shipping lock in Illinois is needed to stop Asian carp from making their way from the Mississippi River system to the Great Lakes. Capitol Bureau Chief Rick Pluta reports.
Governor Snyder traveled to the Lake Michigan resort town of South Haven to make the announcement. He's trying to create a coalition of U.S. states and Canadian provinces to push the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to start the project. He says Wisconsin, Ohio, and Ontario are already on board. Snyder says stopgap measures like underwater electric fences won't work forever. And he says a permanent solution will take almost a decade to complete.
If we don't start today, how much longer would it even be?
Snyder says the states can provide seed money and ideas, but he says it's still up to Congress to authorize the project and provide most of the funding. I'm Rick Pluta at the state capitol.
Staying on the topic of invasive species, by now your Christmas tree is probably a distant memory. But in one part of the Great Lakes, scientists are using the trees to protect wetlands from destructive carp. Our reporting partners at Great Lakes Today help keep us on top of ways to stop invasive species in our area. Angelica Morrison reports from Canada's Royal Botanical Gardens.
The gardens sit near the western end of Lake Ontario. It's a short drive from the U.S. border. When the weather's warm, visitors come to see acres of trails and gardens with roses and lilacs and other collections in bloom. In the winter, it's much quieter, and ecologist Andrea Court is busy battling the common carp.
This is probably the earliest we've done it.
I was following Court as she walked across Grindstone Creek. It's frozen solid, and in each of her hands is a used Christmas tree stripped of all its festive ornaments. Her grip is tight on the base of the trunks, and as she drags the trees behind her, she leaves a pathway of twigs, pine needles, and pieces of brown bark. Her face is red from exposures to temperatures that barely pass the freezing mark.
This job is very weather dependent, so you go when you can.
Waiting for her at the center of the ice is Kyle Mataya, a wetland restoration assistant. He's standing along a berm of trees that stretches across the creek. It's nearly 3 feet high and extends about 300 yards. He grabs the trees and starts to layer them on top of old decaying ones.
I just toss them on top. I just basically build up the spots that got low from over the years and start from the bottom up, kind of like you're shingling a roof, and just make sure there are no holes. I plug all the gaps.
The berm was created around 1999 to keep the big, slow-moving carp out of the marsh. And every year, the team puts out a call for more trees. This year, the goal was to collect just over 3,000 trees. So far, they've got about 1,400.
You don't want to use any sort of man-made or natural materials, as the trees will just break down and compost and build on themselves over time.
Using recycled Christmas trees is not uncommon. Trees have also been repurposed in New York for erosion control. And in Wisconsin, they were used to create a home-like atmosphere for animals at a wildlife center. Ecologist Jen Bowman leads the Christmas Tree Berm project. She says before the berm was built, carp did a lot of damage.
They feed by going through the marsh, and they suck up the bottom sediment that's very soft, and they eat organisms that live in the mud. And they find a lot of these around the roots of the vegetation, so they're digging up around the roots of the vegetation. They end up killing the vegetation.
The common carp was introduced to the Great Lakes in the 1800s. It's a type of Asian carp, but it hasn't gotten as much attention as other varieties, like the silver carp, known for leaping out of the water.
So they've been here for a long time. People consider them naturalized, but they're really wetland destroyers, and they're not native. And they are invasive.
So does the wall of trees really keep the carp out? Court says yes, but it's not foolproof.
They're by no means a permanent wall. We have other animals that tunnel through them, like beavers and muskrats, so those create tunnels through the berm that the fish can get through.
Turns out a beaver has turned the wall into his new summer home. Bowman takes me over to a pile of strategically placed sticks near the center of the berm.
He kind of changed things around so that it's suitable for him, and he lives right in the berm now, and he has a passage he tries to keep clear, which is a challenge for us because we want it to be, you know, preventing carp from being able to get in, and then the beaver wants to be able to just be able to swim through whenever he wants, and then it could let a carp in too. So.
Right. He's like, this is my house now. Thanks, guys. Thanks for building me a house.
I think we have a beaver lodge in almost all of our berms now.
For Great Lakes Today, this is Angelica Morrison.
We'll be right back. Okay, I confess, I cannot wait for the Winter Olympics to begin in less than a week. 20 years ago, the National Hockey League took a multi-week break so that professionals could play in the Olympic Games for the first time ever. This year, though, the league decided to stop giving pros a break so they could play. That decision created opportunities for players who might otherwise never make an Olympic roster. Under the new system, one of the players chosen to compete this year for Team USA is former Michigan State University star Jim Slater. The center from Lapeer, Michigan, played for the Atlanta Thrashers, Winnipeg Jets NHL franchise before spending the last two seasons playing professionally in Switzerland. And that's where WKAR Scott Pohl tracked him down for a FaceTime conversation about his shot at Olympic glory.
Obviously, I play over here in Switzerland, and my wife and my little girl, they still live back in the United States, so it's tough being away from them. And after last season, I was really considering retiring. And, you know, when this all came about, you know, as a hockey fan, I'm a big hockey fan, you know, you want to see the best in the world go against each other. So I was a little disappointed in that, but it also opened up this door for me and, you know, gave me a chance. And, you know, after that, my mind was set that I was going to play another year and try to make this Olympic team. So it worked out great for me. It was kind of mixed feelings. You know, you always want to see the best compete, but this Olympics is going to be really, really special because anybody can win a gold medal. And, you know, whichever country you're playing for, you have a chance. And we have just as good a chance as anybody.
When will Team USA get together? Where will Team USA start to prepare for the Olympics?
So, yeah, we all meet in Pyeongchang on February 9th, and then we start practices on February 10th, and then games, preliminary round games get started on February 14th.
So the team will only be together less than a week before competition begins.
Yeah, it's you know, it's difficult over here because our season, you know, we still have three games left until our Olympic break. So you know, most leagues go right up until the end, and the only way to I guess get to practice and all that is to meet at that time. So it's a little different that way. But hockey is you know, it's a 2 week tournament, so it's kind of like whoever come the closest, the quickest, you know, has a very good chance. So it's that's very important.
You know, Jim, there are a lot of people who prefer the old time amateur feel to the Olympic hockey competition.
Yeah, it's you know, it's kind of different this year. You know, with the mystery of, you know, what to expect. You know, like you said, there's many countries that are able to win a gold medal. It's just not your top two, three, four countries that are usually in it. So, like I said, it's going to be a great experience. Like I said, a lot of people may not know some of these players, but they're really good hockey players. And it's going to be a great tournament. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm just really excited to be a part of it.
One last question. Have you been able to keep up with Spartan hockey and the team's development under Danton Cole in his first year here?
Yeah. You know, I follow him closely. I still come back in the summers and train and skate at Michigan State. So I've got to know some of the players, you know, pretty good, you know, just being around the rink and seeing Danton come in and, you know, what he brings with experience and you know, all the championships that he's won and been a part of. You know, he's a great coach for that program. It's going to take some time, like it usually does when a new coach comes in, but you know, he's got it going on the right track. And you know, I'm excited for Michigan State hockey in the future because they're led by a fantastic coaching staff, and I know he'll do what needs to be done to get results.
Jim Slater is a former Spartan hockey player who's a member of Team USA, getting ready to compete at the Pyeongchang Olympics. Jim Slater, thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate having me.
For WKAR News, I'm Scott Pohl.
And with that, we'll say thank you for joining us for this weekend's Current State. Stay on top of both Larry Nassar's sentencing and MSU's leadership changes by clicking on WKAR.org and listening to Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on 90.5 WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. Thank you for listening, and we'll connect with you again next weekend.
I'll admit I was wrong. What else can I say, girl? Can't you play my head and not my heart? I was drunk, I was gone. That don't make it right, but I promise there were no feelings in my